On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Federal funding for abstinence education is on the rise. A proposed $191 million for 2008, up $28 million from 2007. But recent studies are raising questions, finding no difference in sexual activity between kids with abstinence education and those without it. Proponents of abstinence say the studies are not reflective of the nearly 700 abstinence programs out there. And muddying the waters even further, before the big push for abstinence and since 1991, teenage pregnancy and birth rates have been falling. Up next on Point, we'll look at what's going on in sex ed. Later in this hour, we'll hear from a teenager with Virginity Rules, a Texas abstinence group, and we'll also talk to the president of Planned Parenthood. But first, joining me from San Francisco is Claire Brindis. She's a professor at the University of California, San Francisco, in the departments of pediatrics and obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive health sciences. She is also acting director of the university's Institute for Health Policy Studies. Her research focuses on adolescent, child, and women's health policy. Dr. Brindis, thanks for being with us.
Hello.
And joining me in the studio is Dr. Frieda Busch. She is an obstetrician and gynecologist in private practice in Jackson, Mississippi. And she is a member of the board of directors at the Medical Institute for Sexual Health in Austin, Texas. And for 7 years, she ran a conference on abstinence and youth in Mississippi. Dr. Busch, great to have you here as well.
Good morning.
Dr. Brindis, let me begin with you. From your perspective in the trenches with teenagers, has abstinence education worked?
Well, I think it's important to indicate first that there have been very good news in the area of teen pregnancy prevention. And we've seen that a lot of young people are delaying having sexual intercourse. And among those who are sexually active, many more are using condoms. And that's why over the last 15 years, we've had a very dramatic decrease in the incidence of adolescent births and pregnancies. Clearly, adolescents are benefiting from having a variety of educational opportunities in their communities, including comprehensive sex education that includes messages around abstinence and the important role that parents can play in this kind of education.
Dr. Busch, let me turn to you because Dr. Brindis brings this up. It seems there are studies that suggest that since 1991, teens are abstaining from sex more and that pregnancy rates are down, but that's all happened before this abstinence education that Congress has so generously funded. So what do you attribute that to?
I agree that the rates have definitely gone down, and I applaud that. But we must remember that abstinence education was being taught before the infusion of money with the Welfare Reform Act. And the reason Congress infused that money was because the teen pregnancy rates were still unacceptably high. So abstinence has been alive and well for a while.
Dr. Brindis, you come at this from a public health perspective. Well, you both do. Dr. Busch comes from a medical perspective as well. But Dr. Brindis, does this have to do as much with morality as it does disease from your perspective as well?
From our perspective, the reality is that young people are bombarded with sexual messages in their daily lives, and we feel that it would be irresponsible for them not to have the tools and the skills to be able to deal with these pressures that go far beyond just an abstinence message of saying no to sex until marriage. Clearly, that is the most advantageous in terms of reducing risks from a public health perspective. But we're also understanding that approximately half of young people, it's actually been reduced to about 47% of young people, are sexually active by the time they graduate from high school. So the suggestion here is that from the perspective of public health, we need to think about how can young people protect themselves so that they can navigate their adolescent years without having to face the issue of an unanticipated or unintended pregnancy.
Dr. Busch, let me have you respond to that. Can teenagers hold two messages, as Dr. Brindis is saying, no to sex, but if yes, then be prepared?
Abstinence education really does promote healthy choices as far as abstinence goes, but we also believe in giving young people information about condoms and contraception so that they can choose which option they would take. For example, we give them medically accurate information about condoms and about contraception, but we also give them information about the risks so realistically they can decide. If abstinence is the best choice, we give them all of the benefits of abstinence. We give them refusal skills. We give them character information so that they will not only decide that is the healthiest choice, but they will be successful at it. And I contend that the reduction in sex has been a direct result of the abstinence programs.
What's your response to that, Dr. Brandes?
Well, I think that there's been a number of analyses to try to understand what's going on with young people, because clearly they are playing a much more responsible role around their sexual behavior. Clearly part of that is a relationship to abstinence messages that are coming to them through a variety of channels. But the availability of condoms, the availability of different methods of contraception, including the patch, including the availability of emergency contraception, has also been demonstrated to play a very significant role in the reductions that we have seen among adolescents of all racial and ethnic backgrounds. And in particular, we've seen a very dramatic reduction in the area of African American youth, who are really leading the role of responsible, sexually active adolescents, as well as abstinent adolescents among the African-American population.
What is the role of families, of parents, and perhaps even their faith? Isn't that the most important factor in deterring teenagers from sexual activity, regardless of what's going on in the school? Dr. Bush?
Many of the programs promote abstinence with the idea that teens want to get a clear message from their parents. And so their parents saying that abstinence is the best method, their faith saying that it is the best method, and their desire to avoid the risk associated with teen pregnancy and STIs is the top three reasons why teens choose to abstain sexually.
Dr. Brandes, are parents taking the lead here from your perspective?
Many parents are, and in fact, from our research, we've seen that, in fact, about 70% of parents are talking to their adolescents and children, younger children, about sex and their values. And I applaud that. I also think, though, that we need to recognize that apart from parents, there are many peer pressures to have sexual relations. And in fact, we know that teenagers look to their peers for some of those influences. Many teens feel that everyone around them is having sex, so consequently, oftentimes they feel that kind of pressure. However, I do want to point out the fact that parents do play a very integral role, and it is the value system of the parents that plays such a substantial impact on adolescents' lives.
Above everything else?
I would say that it's a huge factor. It would be difficult, you know, to make broad stereotype or generalities about this, but they definitely inculcate in young people the values. Now, we know that in homes where parents are talking to their kids about sexual responsibility, delaying having sex, and being protected if they are going to be sexually active, that in those homes, those parents who are talking with their kids about these images or these values are also talking to them about a lot of other expectations and standards. So likely in these homes, it is also that they're having conversations about the future, about alternatives to early childbearing, about the importance of education. However, I'm concerned about families where those conversations do not take place, where parents may feel very uncomfortable about bringing up the subject. And consequently, that's why we need to be thinking about where are other sources of valid information, evidence-based information for young people, scientifically driven, whether the adolescent receives that through the media, through schools, through their faith communities, and as well as peers.
Dr. Bush, how do you respond to that? In a family where conversations don't happen, where education is not being transferred to the child?
I agree with Dr. Brandes on many of the areas. We are very much in common ground as far as those conversations taking place. And that's one of the ways that the abstinence programs are making a dent. because they actually are available to all students regardless of their parental background. And we encourage a community-based effort so that even if the parents themselves have not made that choice, that they are involved in the education process. So when I say community-based, we involve the students in the schools, the educators, as well as the community, and we bring them the medically accurate information so that they can not only see the generalized risk, they can see the perceived risk and make it personal, and they can decide with these risks that I can make a difference. And the parents, and she mentioned the African-American community. I am African-American, and I talk to these parents every day, and they're very encouraging to us to continue this information because they choose a better life for their children.
Right now, I'd like to bring in another voice from Longview, Texas. Jamie Waite joins me. She is a teenager, 18 years old, just out of high school. She is a member of the group Virginity Rules, a federally and state-funded abstinence program run by the Longview Wellness Center in Eastern Texas. Jamie, nice to have you.
Hi, Jane.
Tell us, why did you become a member of this group called Virginity Rules?
Well, it's something that I really believe in, and actually, my sister-in-law got me into it. She introduced me to it, sort of, and asked me if I wanted to become a part of it. And since it is something that I believe, and I wanted to help others to know that, too, and let people know that, people are still being abstinent and that it is an important thing in their lives. So I joined the program to help them out and to be around people who also believe what I believe.
Can you describe what a meeting or a class is like, Jamie?
We just go in. It's a lot of fun. We have door prizes and the meetings, and we talk about what we can put on billboards and ideas for TV commercials that we've had, and we talk about the importance of being abstinent and the consequences of not and all that.
And who are the kids that join the group? Are they kids from all across sections of school life?
We have, it's mostly like middle school to high school students who go, and it's just around our area.
And what's the reaction from your friends who are not members of Virginity Rules or other kids in the school who are not members? Do they respect you, or do they sort of make fun of you for joining this group?
No, most of my friends are abstinent, and I mean most of them aren't part of the program, but they are abstinent, and they do respect me and support what we're doing here in this program, and they think that it's really cool that we could stand up for what we believe like that.
And so what is your response then, Jamie, to this study that seems to suggest that abstinence education does not, in and of itself, keep teenagers from having sex? Do you believe that? Jamie?
Yes, I'm sorry. Could you ask the question again?
Yeah. What's your response to this study, this report that seems to suggest that abstinence education doesn't work, that it doesn't keep teenagers from having sex? Do you believe that it does work?
Well, I mean, it's still going to be your choice, but for the most part, it does work. Like, people are interested. Parents want this program for their kids, and kids will listen to it, and you're still going to have the pressure to have sex, but this gives you a lot of knowledge, and it introduces the consequences to you, and it's still going to be your choice, but a lot of kids are listening to the message.
Your face is on billboards and on television. You are a representative for Virginity Rules. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think it's cool that anybody could do that. I mean, not just me, but to let other kids know that, I think other kids need to know that it is important and that it's not going to be weird and that people can stand up for what they believe in.
From your experience with your friends and you yourself, Jamie, how much does talk about sexual behavior and abstinence begin at home? And is that a part of your religious upbringing?
Yeah, it is a part of my religious upbringing, and I think it should start at home. Your parents should be teaching you. And if I was a parent, like, I would want my kids to know. I wouldn't want my kids to be out there having sex with just anybody, you know? Like, I would want to educate my kids, and I think parents should be. It is something that should be taught in the home from an early age.
Jamie, thank you. Hold the line for just a moment. Let me turn back to our guest, Frieda Bush, in the studio. How much of the abstinence debate, Dr. Bush, intersects religion with medicine?
The abstinence message is a healthy, medically accurate message. It may also be moral, which it is. Moral sets standards for behavior, character, and conduct. But because a message is medically accurate and also moral, does not make it religious, even though there are many religions who hold to the same moral standards.
Dr. Brendis, how much of the debate from your perspective is a sanctity of life issue that at some point relates to the abortion issue down the road?
Well, clearly everyone would like to avoid the necessity for abortion. And the reality is that many of these abstinence programs, and there are over 700 in the country, a number of them actually do use a lot of scare tactics and are not as fair or equitable in terms of the presentation of the information. They definitely use scare tactics to try to get kids to stop or avoid having sex. And what was very important about the Mathematica study is showing that, in fact, when you follow kids over 5 years, there really is no impact of having a curriculum program that only gives one perspective or one message. The kids needed to have information about what methods of contraception, because half of them ended up having sex, and only half of those were actually using contraception. So my concern about abstinence versus comprehensive sex education is, how do we prepare our young people to be adequately protected in the future? They may not be sexually active today, but what happens later? And what you have seen when we follow adolescents who have had abstinence education, they do delay having sex, but when they start having sex, they tend to be less protected than other kids who've received a much more comprehensive approach.
Jamie Waite from Longview, Texas, 18 years old, a member of Virginity Rules. Do you understand what Dr. Brendis is talking about when she uses the phrase scare tactics? Is that something that you hear in your abstinence education?
Yes, ma'am.
In what way?
I think they tell us, like, about the consequences that could come from not being abstinent, about the diseases that you could contract, or about, and that is scary. Like, they've shown us pictures of what happens, and it's disgusting. And we know that, like, you could get pregnant, and that's a scare tactic too. I mean, that's something that is a reason, I guess, that I would say that I wouldn't want to have sex right now at this age, because I'm not prepared for the consequences. I'm not willing to sacrifice having a baby or having a disease or anything like that.
Well, Jamie Waite, joining us from Longview, Texas, thanks so much for your time. Good luck to you. I know you're planning to go to college to become a nurse. Good luck.
Thank you, ma'am.
Take care. Bye-bye. Let's turn to the phones. Kim is calling from Newington, Connecticut. Kim, you're on the line.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm going to refrain from giving my last name because I don't want my son to be embarrassed, but I have taught him abstinence since he was a child. I also have a degree in drug and alcohol counseling, and I've taught them not only abstinence for sex, but abstinence and the use of use of drugs.
So you think sex ed should be handled by families?
Totally. And I think health, you know, which is basically sex ed and drug use, should be handled by families, should be given the option of handled by families, because there are many qualified parents that have taught their children since they could speak. Okay.
That's one perspective. Kim, thank you for your call. Jessica is calling with another perspective from Manchester, Connecticut. Jessica, you're on the line.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to put in that as a young person, just fresh out of high school and just recently into college, I find that my experience with sexual education, and I've gone through both abstinence and comprehensive, is that it's often treated as a problem that needs to be fixed instead of treating the people being educated as people with legitimate feelings, and that those sexual feelings are real, you know, and that I find that just does not occur in the education that I have come in contact with. And I was wondering if we could address how does that affect the people that have to go through this education?
Thanks for your call, Jessica. Dr. Busha, I'll turn to you.
Abstinence educators generally teach sex as a normal process, and it is expected that when you have sex, you will get pregnant, and if you have multiple partners, you will get the STI. So it is taught as a whole process. It is natural. There are physical, social, as well as emotional consequences associated with it. And if you delay sexual activity until you are in a long-term, lifetime committed relationship with an uninfected person, you can expect to have a healthier life. As Jamie mentioned earlier, delaying sex is not necessarily a scare tactic, other than to say it leaves you free to pursue your education. It leaves you free to pursue the healthier things in life, and so without the encumbrances.
Dr. Brindis, you actually suggest that there's a lot of misinformation disseminated in the course of abstinence education. Is that correct?
Yes, and I would say that we have to understand that in the curriculum, and as we understand, there are many curriculums across the country that are providing abstinence messages. And there have been primarily a very negative perspective on the utility or the ability of condoms to protect young people against STIs. There was a study in the year 2001 by the CDC looking at the impact of the use of chlamydia, but that showed perhaps at that time that condoms weren't as effective. Since that time, however, there have been a number of additional studies, work, for example, by Dr. Rachel Weiner, who clearly demonstrates that effective condom use does protect against HPV and against chlamydia. So that is one level of information that I'm concerned about in terms of the investments that we're making with taxpayer dollars on abstinence education. The other factor that I think we need to understand is how much mythology exists still among our young people regarding their risks of getting pregnant and their risks of getting HIV or other STIs. So, for example, I hear young people telling me that they can't get pregnant the first time they have sex, or they can't get pregnant if they douche with Coca-Cola, or they can't get pregnant if their boyfriends are drinking Mountain Dew. And this is in the 21st century, where we still see a tremendous amount of misinformation and lack of really valid information around pregnancy and STIs risks.
Dr. Bush, you want to respond?
A couple of things. On the Wiener study, I'd like to say that the young people that were recruited for that study were freshmen in college. They were 18 plus years of age, who had abstained sexually to that point principally, and they had limited partners. So already they were doing what abstinence educators were encouraging people to do, to delay sex until they were older and to limit their partners, which reduced their risk. So if there was a benefit to the use of condoms in that study, part of it was because of those behavioral modifications that were also taking place. And the same CDC report that Dr. Brindis referred to states that condoms were ineffective or could not be proven effective for most STIs, including the reduction for HPV, as well as for chlamydia, 50%. So medically accurate information is something that we try to present without putting a spin on it. And so most of the comprehensive sex ed curricula will tell them the benefits of condoms without giving them a realistic view of the risks that are still associated. And the abstinence education programs do present both the benefits as well as the risk, with the emphasis on abstinence.
Based on what both of you just said, I think this is the perfect opportunity to ask this question about politics and studies. Because as you both well know, you can set up a study to provide any outcome you desire. You can stack the deck, essentially. We're talking about abstinence education today. Newsweek recently cited a 2002 study that suggests abstinence education was working. One study says one thing, one study says another. How much of this, as it relates to sex education, is pure and simple politics? Dr. Bush?
The Mathematica study in particular that recently came out only did a small sampling of 4 programs, and they were young programs.
And the Mathematica study was?
The Mathematica study was the one that was just put out in April that evaluated abstinence education.
But to suggest that it wasn't effective.
To suggest that it was not effective. But it only looked at 4 programs. That was a very non-representative sample of the programs, and it was not set up ideally. And so the fact that it even showed positively that young people did not increase or decrease their risk of condom use when they did become sexually active was even a positive. In a study that was not well designed, that used only a small sample, it still showed benefit for abstinence.
Dr. Brindis, your response to the politics of these studies?
Well, I think politics do play a role in the way that data is interpreted. For example, Dr. Bush's comments on the Mathematica study, the study that just came out in April. And clearly, there were 4 sites that were chosen, but these sites were extremely well chosen. They were considered to be some of the best, strongest abstinence education programs in the country. And they were followed, the participants were followed 5 years, which really does give us a good sense about what's the longer-term impact of having abstinence education. Clearly, having an investment of about $200 million on abstinence only or abstinence education clearly can be a factor here, but we all, I think, with Dr. Bush also recognize the complexity of trying to change human behavior, both in terms of helping young people delay having sex, and then if they aren't going to be delayers, to have protection. And when we think about all the different segments of the adolescent population, whether they be young people who are quite young and in middle school versus adolescents who may be in high school, adolescents who may be in foster care, juvenile justice systems, we need to be thinking about a comprehensive array of interventions that are available to these young people.
I'm joined by Claire Brindis, professor of pediatrics and obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive health sciences at the University of California in San Francisco. And with me in studio is Frieda Bush. She is obstetrician-gynecologist in Jackson, Mississippi, and is also on the board at the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. Earlier in the hour, we heard from one teenager, a member of Virginity Rules. Here is teenager Scooter Bryant on why he has chosen abstinence. This spot was created by the East Texas Abstinence Program, which runs the website virginityrules.com.
It's hard to find teens that are my age that do believe in abstinence, do believe in everything that I believe in.
I want to be an actor. In fact, that's the only thing that I really want to do in my life, that I really have a career. That's what I feel my purpose is, to act.
I knew where I wanted to be. As far as I'm concerned, a kid is not going to make that any easier.
I respect myself and that special someone to know that them nor I want a bunch of baggage to carry along with themselves in a relationship.
My name is Scooter Bryant, and I can wait.
Dr. Bush, I wanted to ask you, coming out of that clip, for the last 7 years, you've sponsored an abstinence and youth conference in Jackson, Mississippi, and I wonder how you're received generally by the young people who attend.
Oh, the conferences are great because the young people want to know that they have choices above ahead of them. Many times the media and the programs will tell them that you're expected to have sex. And so to know that they can have a choice and they can choose to pursue their lives without the encumbrances of pregnancy and STIs is really encouraging and gives them the freedom to do that.
Dr. Brindis, you actually compare teenagers having sex with drinking and driving. Will you explain your analogy for us on that?
I'd be happy to. I've been very fortunate to have 2 great kids, and as a parent, I think we can all agree that a lot more attention is paid on early childhood development and teaching parents how to provide the kind of nurturing and teaching 0 to 5 as compared to preparing parents to be really good parents of adolescents when the parents themselves need a lot of support and nurturing and skills on how to do that effectively. And my comment was that when I was raising my kids, I found that it was very important to give them strong messages about alcohol reduction, meaning that I wouldn't. I was giving them strong messages about the fact that I didn't want them ever to get into a car with someone who had driven, who had been drinking alcohol, as well as I would never want my child to get into a car who had been drinking themselves, and that they could call me at any time, day or night, to bring them home if that situation had happened. The analogy here is the fact that sometimes in adults arguing about these issues, we often argue that kids can't hold the two messages of don't drink and drive. And in the same way, I give strong messages about abstaining, delaying having sex. But if you're ever in that situation, that I would want the youngster to be protected against an unintended pregnancy, against an STI, and against HIV.
Dr. Bush wants to jump in here. Dr. Brindis, your response?
Sure. Oh, I agree wholeheartedly that my children have actually helped me to become more effective in giving these messages, because I want for them and for the community kids the same thing. It's important for them to understand that their behavior affects what the outcomes are. And many of the studies that we have done, even for abstinence programs, support the effectiveness of it, so that should they choose to use condoms, that they will reduce their risk for STIs and the like. And the abstinence programs do not lessen their ability to use those condoms should they choose that.
Let's go to the phones again. Daryl is calling from Woodlands, Texas. Daryl, hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Jane.
Hello.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have to agree with Dr. Brindis' most recent comments regarding drink driving and also her lead into to sexual activity. If you don't, preferably don't, but if you do, of course, be protected. And I think that's probably one of my biggest concerns regarding the abstinence education in the way that it's so far been presented, or at least most strongly approved by the government. It seems that it's been entirely don't, with very little regard paid to the fact that it's a biological necessity.
Dr. Bush is shaking her head vehemently. You want to respond, Dr. Bush?
The abstinence message is a very positive message. It is a medically accurate message. Risk avoidance is always primary, and that is a public health message rather than risk reduction, which is the one that using condoms usually promotes. And most of the programs, when you do follow the strict public health guidelines, they are authentic, they are accurate, and they are life-affirming. So it's do, and you will be able to pursue your education. Do, and you will have a healthier lifestyle.
Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood. She has spent more than 20 years of working for reproductive freedom and social justice. She was president of Pro-Choice Vote in 2000 and also America Votes in 2004. Previously, she served as deputy chief of staff for Nancy Pelosi, helping her become first female Democratic leader of the House. Nice to have you with us, Ms. Richards.
Thanks, Jane. Nice to be here.
So from your perspective at Planned Parenthood, where do you stand on this debate of abstinence education?
Well, I'm really glad you're having this show, because I think this is it's such an important policy issue for the country right now. And I guess what I would say is the problem is that abstinence only as a program has just been a complete failure. I think that, you know, I'm the parent of two teenagers. I think it's really important that parents talk to their children at all ages about the importance of delaying sexual activity until they're ready. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, this program, if it only stresses abstinence, isn't protecting our young people. You know, Congress's own study of abstinence only showed that it did nothing to reduce the sexual activity of teens. And so I think that I have no problem with abstinence. I just have a problem with the only part. And I think what's really important is that we prepare young people, particularly teenagers, with information that they're going to need for their own health, and particularly to prepare for the future. And I think that this policy, it's just done a great disservice to young people in this country.
What's the future in your mind of funding for abstinence education and for sex education generally? Where do you see it going?
I think this is a program that is kind of run its course, and it may take a while for folks to move completely at the national level. But what we've seen increasingly is governors in states saying, you know, we're not going to put money into these programs anymore because they're not providing our young people the information they need to keep healthy and safe. And we've seen, I think, now 11 states reported by the New York Times that have said these programs simply aren't working. And that, of course, it's fine to talk about abstinence, but we got to make sure that young people, when they do decide to become sexually active, have the information and access to health care that they need. So I actually think we saw the Surgeon General going on in the media saying essentially the same thing, which is he's been prevented from talking about the fact that abstinence is not in and of itself a program that's going to meet the needs of young people. It's denying teenagers information that they need to be able to make responsible decisions.
Let me turn to Dr. Claire Brendis in San Francisco. Cecile Richards brings up a good point. Many states like California, where you are refusing federal funding for sex ed. How has that changed the equation where you are? And nationally.
Well, in California, it is the only state in the country that has never accepted abstinence. In the way that Cecile has just commented, 11 states are rejecting abstinence education, and three more legislative sessions in Colorado, Iowa, and Washington are also trying to limit the presence of these dollars in public schools. We need to understand that for every $4 of federal dollars, $3 from states have to be matched. And so we're really extending and putting in a great deal of dollars into something that has been shown not to work. California, I want to note with pride, that has had a 44% reduction in the number of teen pregnancies and births. And there's also been a very dramatic reduction in the number of abortions. So it's not that the pregnancies are ending up in abortion. It's also clearly important to recognize that California has adopted a very comprehensive approach. So the rest of the country, it's about a 30% reduction. We've had a 44% reduction because we've accepted both a comprehensive family life education approach, which includes strong abstinence messages, as well as access to reproductive health services, so that we know that there has been a reduction in both sexual behavior, but also an increase in the level of adolescents who represent responsible youth.
Freda Bush, you hear Dr. Brendis saying abstinence education doesn't work. Cecile Richards calling it a complete failure. Your response?
Abstinence does work. And there are studies that have shown that abstinence works, and there are studies that have evaluated both comprehensive sex and abstinence, and the comprehensive sex ed programs also have their problems. There have not been those that have shown that they completely work, and it's important for people to understand that the abstinence is still the healthiest method, and if a program doesn't work, doesn't mean that abstinence doesn't work.
Go to the phones again. Stacy is calling from Washington, Iowa. Stacy, you're on the line. Hello.
Hi, James. I'm a high school teacher here in Iowa, and what I've noticed over the recent years is that with students who have had some abstinence-only education, either through faith-based programs or through different schools, and the students who have had a comprehensive sex education program, even if the levels of sexual activity as far as intercourse have dropped, there seems to have been more of a rise and more pressure on these kids to engage in oral sex. Mm. And it seems like both of these programs, in looking at a comprehensive sex ed program and the abstinence-only program, the primary focus is on traditional intercourse, and there's not as much of an emphasis on the fact that there are risks involved even in oral sex. Mm. And, teaching kids to use condoms or dental dams, engaging in those practices seems to have been thrown to the wayside.
Stacy, thank you for your call. Peter is calling from Toronto, Canada. Peter, hello, you're on the line.
Hello, good morning. I wanted to just mention something that's essential here. Information, of course, has to be there, but what's missing, and I think the thing that can bridge the two solitudes that I'm hearing, is the greatest taboo of all, and that's masturbation. Jocelyn Elders was absolutely right, one of the best surgeon generals the U.S. ever had. My experience professionally as well as familial has shown that if you combine abstinence with teaching masturbation, you can have the greatest positive effect on reducing pregnancy rates, ensuring safety, and just in general making sure that the kids get through through that very difficult
period. All right, Peter, thank you. Frieda Bush, your response?
when you promote abstinence, you're promoting a whole healthy lifestyle. And so, as I said earlier, it's the physical, emotional, and social aspect of it. And you can't just divert their attention. You need to be encouraging them to do things that will make their whole life healthy. And I can say that the comprehensive sex ed programs, when they promote that behavior, they're not encouraging the healthier social as well as psychological behavior. It's important to know also that the abstinence programs have been shown to work. For example, there is a unpublished study by Jamont that it showed in their, they have a abstinence program, a comprehensive sex ed program, and they found that there was a reduction in initiation of sex as well as long-term maintenance when they evaluated them like 6 months to 24 months later. And this is the same program being taught by the same person. And the evaluation shows that there is a difference more for abstinence than for comprehensive sex ed.
Cecile Richards?
Jane, yeah,
yes,
I mean,
go ahead.
Well, you know, with all respect to the doctor, this is, it's, what's important here is, do we care more about the health and safety of our teens or about promoting a particular sort of political ideology? And I think that when I look to the research, there's no, to me, the person I would look to is our, you know, the most important doctor, frankly, in America, our Surgeon General, who has himself has said he has wanted to address this topic of sex education and the lack of our provision of information and protection of, you know, the health and safety of teens. But there was, this policy has been in place, and there has been no willingness by this administration to hear the science, but instead to actually preach abstinence only, which he himself has said is scientifically incorrect.
Let me ask you this.
Because
we're running out of time,
yep.
And I wanted to ask you about again about the future and the Democrats in Congress now. Are you certain that they will be standing up against abstinence education funding come in the days and months to come?
Well, I think, you know, we'll have to see. I think there's clearly, I think they are seeing, as I'm sure the Republicans are as well, this trend in the country to have the governors basically saying, this is not working for our young people. We're not doing right by young people in our state. And I think they have to look to the polls, which most folks in office do, and that is that 76% of American parents want their children to get comprehensive sex education and very much support turning back to a more mainstream approach to healthy sexuality for young people. Look, we have a healthcare epidemic in this country. 750,000 young people will get pregnant, teenagers will get pregnant this year unless we do something differently. So I think we have to really reevaluate our policies and make a better choice for teens.
Dr. Claire Brindis, so what do you see the trends as in our last remaining moments here?
I think the trends clearly point to the importance of thinking about multiple strategies going on concurrently in our communities. Teenagers need more than just sex education, whether it's comprehensive or abstinence. They need viable alternatives to early childbearing, including better schools, better alternative career pathways, after-school programs. And I'm in agreement with Dr. Bush about the fact that these are complex behaviors. We need to be able to give young people as many tools as possible to be successful, and especially as they transition into young adulthood. They represent our future.
Last word, Dr. Bush.
I would say that young people have been shown with the teen brain studies to not be totally mature, and we need to help them to choose the best answers that will help them make a difference in their lives. And abstinence programs are the best answer. They are the healthiest choices. And even though they may give information about condoms, they are not medical doctors, and they need to get that information from their doctor.
Dr. Freda Bush joining me in the studio. Thank you very much. Claire Brindis in San Francisco, I appreciate your time as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Cecile Richards joining me from Washington, D.C., president of Planned Parenthood. Thanks so much, Cecile.
Thank you, Jane.
I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.